Welcome to After the Buzzer. This is our multimedia festival this week. We're going to go Zoom-wise, and we're also going to go our regular podcast method. And we have with us two guests. We have Millersville men's basketball coach Casey Stitzel and former E-Town boys basketball coach Rocky Parise, who's living the life in Virginia. So we're all jealous of him. So what we wanted to talk about this week, we've been kind of doing a lot of flashback things, and we've been presented with the ultimate flashback, and that is ESPN's documentary The Last Dance, which is about the Michael Jordan era Chicago Bulls dynasty. And it's a 10-part series. They've aired the first four parts. So I guess we'll just go around the horn here. I have some impressions. I have a sizable nit to pick about the entire premise of the thing, but I love it otherwise. But I'd like to hear everybody else's thoughts.
Rocky, you're first.
Yeah, I think two takeaways for me is the first and foremost, anytime you're a dad, you sit there watching stuff with your kids who are very impressionable. Hearing Michael Jordan talk about that first road trip he went on with the Bulls, walked into the room, saw guys doing drugs, alcohol, everything like that, and decided, no, I'm not getting into that, walked out, and, you know, look at what his career became. So that was a good dad moment. And then the other one, too, was Dennis Rodman when he was talking about how he was on the street as a kid and never got mixed up into drugs. And, you know, that's a big fathering point for me. So, you know, to think about if those guys would have made different decisions, where their careers and lives would have ended up, is pretty cool. The second thing that made the biggest impression on me, and I was actually talking to Adam Spinello about this, assistant at Dickinson, was, you know, at what point did that Bulls thing really start to take off? Because I'm a big proponent of winning breeds winning, and winning breeds good atmospheres and environments.
Right.
And, you know, the thing that stuck out in that was it wasn't winning that started it all. It was actually that anger and that frustration of not being able to kind of get to the pinnacle that they went through in 89 and 90 against the Pistons. So that anger kind of motivated them. You know, they said they got right back into the weight room right after the Eastern Conference Finals in 90.
Right.
And that was actually what vaulted everything. And then once the winning happened with the Lakers in 91, then you started to see the winning breeding the winning. But it was interesting to see how it got to that point. So those have been the two takeaways for me so far.
Casey, what do you got?
I think, first of all, it's reminded the world how good Michael Jordan is, and how good he was. And you know, even for someone like me, I'm a Lakers guy, you know, so obviously we got LeBron now, and obviously the late, great Kobe Bryant was a guy that I looked up to. And just to see how Jordan moves, you know, he moves different. You know, he was the really first really good athlete, you know, back in the day, him, obviously, and Dominique Wilkins and Julius Erving. So I think it reminds people how good Michael Jordan was, and how big of a winner he was. And then kind of what Rocky said about how much their failure drove them to be so good.
Yeah.
And somebody that's been a part of rebuilding programs here as a coach, you know, I've always driven that into my guys and my teams that, you know, you have to fail first before you kind of succeed. And Jordan's Bulls have kind of shown that. The losing to the Pistons, getting beat up a little bit, the failure, the adversity, you know, that kind of drove them to work harder. The weight room, Jordan said he never lifted. Then he started to lift after he got beat by the Pistons. So I think it's a lesson for all guys and kids and coaches that everybody wants to win, you know, right away, and everyone wants to be successful. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for failing and how much you can learn from it. And obviously that's what kind of, like Rocky said, breeds winning eventually.
Morty, you and I are a different generation than these two guys. I think Casey just said Jordan was the first great athlete. What?
At least they're the first great athlete that I saw growing up.
All right.
You would probably say Julius Erving, or even farther back than that.
Yeah, we're way older than that.
I was going to go George Mikan.
Oh, yeah, George Mikan. Man. I'm not going to go that far. I thought a couple of things about this were so interesting, the different ways that these things are perceived. when that thing where the Pistons like walked off the court right. with a minute left, and I thought that was such a dick move when they did. I can remember when they did that. Mm-hmm. You got to be kidding me. And but I didn't really remember the thing that Isaiah Thomas said about how the Celtics did the same thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't exactly the same.
No, it was not.
A little disingenuous. But I didn't remember that. And it wasn't – I was kind of interested in what Isaiah Thomas had to say. And then the next day on ESPN, they had him on a lot of their chat shows. And he sort of made an interesting defense of those Pistons teams, who I hated because yeah. I thought they dragged basketball down. I thought there was a period in the 80s where the NBA could not have been better. The balance between the offense and the defense was perfect. They're unbelievable teams, unbelievable players, the incredibly positive Bird and Magic thing. And then I thought it went down. I thought it got too physical, too isolated, too overcoached, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought the Pistons were sort of the vanguard of that, whether they dragged it down or whether they saw it coming and took advantage, I don't know. But so I sort of hated them. But I came away from this. Isaiah is one of the people that I came away from this slightly more sympathetic to than I had been before 40.
Yeah. So I love it just generally speaking. Let's put that out front. But my small nit I have to pick is just about the whole concept of The Last Dance, that Jerry Krause was the guy, the villain in all this, that broke it all apart. I mean, there's no general manager in any sport, much less basketball, who has that kind of power. And I happened to listen to Sam Smith, who covered those Bulls teams and wrote three books about them. And he was on a podcast the other day. And he said that what actually happened was, after the 95-96 season, where the Bulls won 72 and won the title, Phil Jackson was ready to call it quits right then, but a group of players led by Ron Harper said, "No, we don't want you to leave." So he came back for one more year, and then they won it again. So after that season, he's ready to call it quits again, because he figures that by that time, you know, the players are tired of listening to him. It's time to move on to something else. So then Jerry Reinsdorf actually goes out and visits him in the summertime at his place in Montana and says, "No, why don't you come back? And by the way, are you interested in this rebuild that we're going to have to undergo?" And Phil wasn't interested in that at all. He wasn't interested in anything beyond 97-98. So that was that. And Jordan...
He wasn't a rebuild guy.
Yeah, he was not a rebuild guy.
Not a rebuild guy.
So,
How about that stint he had with the Knicks?
Not a rebuild guy. No, not at all. So, and Jordan's wedded to Phil. He doesn't want to come back without Phil. And meanwhile, Pippen's sick of his contract, so he's not coming back. And Rodman is Rodman, so he's not going to come back. But in the meantime, Reinsdorf has gone to Jerry Krause and said, "Well, this is what's going to happen. This is going to be Phil's last year." And then that's where they have that meeting. And he says, "You can go 82-0 and you're not going to be back." And Jackson and Jordan framed the narrative in modern terms. And this is Jordan's baby. This whole thing is Jordan's
Jordan
baby.
Jordan owns this material.
Yeah. So this is.
Here's something for you basketball coaches that is really interesting to me. More than any other sport, a basketball team is like a family, and you guys, I think, and you guys kind of have to be the head of the family and manage that. Talk about does any of this resonate with you? Even though you're not working with these gigantic ego corporation guys, but you're working with young guys. But does any of this resonate from? Are you watching this and thinking it's interesting from the standpoint of some of your experience coaching?
Yeah, go ahead, Case. I'll let you answer that first.
Okay. I think what it does is it shows you. I think Phil Jackson was severely underrated.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, and I think this documentary is actually going to show people that great coaching isn't sometimes the out of bounds play you draw up. it's not your press break. It's a lot of it. And Rocky, I think, sees this too, obviously, from playing and coaching high school. And same with me, is it's ego managing.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting guys to buy in. It's getting guys to feel comfortable. It's building relationships with guys so that when you do have to give them some real talk and get hard on them, that they understand you're coming from a place of caring in your heart.
Yeah.
And what you see with Phil, with a guy like Rodman, crazy crazy as that is, that, you know, social media would be blowing up if LeBron James took a 48-hour vacation to Vegas in the middle of the regular season. But what it shows you is Phil is the ultimate coach that manages his roster. And obviously the triangle is a great offense, and he's a great coach X's and O's, but I don't think he gets enough credit. You hear a lot of people say, well, I could win with Kobe, I could win with Shaq, I could win with Pippen, I could win with Jordan, but that's not necessarily true. I've been on and coached teams that had a lot of talent that never reached their full ceiling because of egos and not managing, you know, each other and managing everything. So I think it just gives a clear idea how great of a manager, how great of a coach Phil Jackson is. And it's not easy just to coach great players. You know, you got to get them to buy in, and that's the hardest part.
Yeah, and to kind of tie in what you said, Case, and what you said, Gordy, I think that whole ego thing that we're seeing with Phil Jackson managing those guys, for Jerry Krause to take a chance and fire Doug Collins in 1989 after taking him to the Eastern Conference Finals, and don't forget, Michael Jordan loved Doug Collins.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a huge chance for him to take. But I think what Jerry Krause is thinking, and again, you know, I'm not trying to make him look great because I know he's being a villain in this, but you do have to sit back and say, wow, he saw the Tex Winter triangle. He believed it.
Right.
He saw that Phil believed in the Tex Winter triangle.
Right.
And that triangle was the ultimate piece for Phil Jackson to get rid of those egos and come in and say, hey, Michael, you're going to share the ball. You're not going to score 37 a game anymore, but we're going to win. So I think, you know, what you're saying, Case, like ultimately that was the start of it all for him, that started allowing him to put his pieces in the place that they were supposed to go.
Well,
there's one thing about the last installment that was on Sunday night, which I really thought was a lot about, it was mostly Phil and Rodman, really, that kind of featured. But one thing that I think it kind of underplayed, and again, Michael Jordan kind of owns this material, is that I think Phil, from everything I've read and everything I've observed, Phil really had to drag Jordan kicking and screaming to, you don't want to win the scoring title if you want to win the championship. You want to run this offense even though it's going to cause you to give up the ball and give up and not be as ball dominant. He had to be dragged kicking and screaming to that a little bit. And that maybe was his, maybe not, flaws may not be the right word, but I guess imperfection. And you saw the stuff with Rodman, which was sort of amazing. Phil likening him to the bizarre guy in an Indian tribe. I thought that was pretty cool. But I think it underplayed that piece of it a little bit, with Jordan really having to take some time to understand the value of backing off a little bit.
Yeah, I think we should understand, too, that the great players always get better. Like, as we mentioned earlier, Jordan got stronger. He also he developed his shot as time went along. And this is something I wanted to ask both of you guys, you know, do superstars necessarily have to have that, you know, quote unquote edge that Jordan had, that Kobe had? Because, you know, the counter argument is guys like Duncan or Steve Nash or Julius Erving. What do you guys think? You know, Casey, what do you think about that premise?
I mean, I think everyone has that edge, and to make an argument that those guys you mentioned might have had it, they might just show it a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In a different competitive manner. When you think of the guys that, you know, Bird was, Bird, Magic, Kobe, Jordan. I mean, those guys, I mean, they were out for blood.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's different levels of it, but I think, you know, I think LeBron James has gotten criticized because people thought he didn't have it.
Right.
You know, and I think he has, and I think he's just different. You know,
yeah.
Different personality. That's what makes the world go round. Everyone's a little bit different. You know, some people show it more on their face. Some people keep it more internalized. You know, for me being a Kobe guy, watching Jordan, you could see that Kobe was a lot like that. You know,
yeah, right.
Just here reading a lot of stories about him and games and practice and stuff like that. So those guys were more visible killers,
yeah,
you know, from that standpoint. But I think every great, if you want to be really great, you got to have some of that. You know, and that's why I think it's so hard. You know, when you talk about Jordan and Phil did it to Kobe too, to got him to understand you got to play a team game, all that stuff, is those guys think they're so great, they don't have to pass. they think they're so good that they don't need anyone, you know?
Right.
Was that a good shot? Well, I took it. Of course it was a good shot.
Right.
particularly Kobe, Casey.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, those guys, they think, you know, and that's what made them great. But that's also probably what Phil had to really overcome with some of those guys, too, because they're so great, they have to realize that they can't do it by themselves. But when I think of killers, I do think of Jordan and Kobe.
Yeah, for sure.
Those are the two guys I think of right away.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think when you talk about different personalities of superstars, I think you hit the nail on the head with, like, Steve Nash and Tim Duncan versus, like, a Kobe and a Jordan. I think two things. The first thing is, no matter how they perceive themselves, all those superstars are the most confident people in the entire league. I think confidence is the one thing that is consistent between any, you know, great athlete and just a good athlete. So that's number one. So even though, you know, Tim Duncan wasn't very flashy about it, Tim Duncan knew he was the best player on the floor every time he stepped on the floor. He never questioned that.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing, too, that I think that gets really underrated is time and place. Being in the right place at the right time. I mean, there's so many guys.
That is definitely underrated. Yeah,
we've seen come up through. I mean, just think of high school, think college, think professional. Guys that were super talented, but never really in the right place at the right time to make their games kind of, you know, blow up and expand. And you know, that happened. That could have happened to anybody. You know, once we got to college, like, we could have been the most talented player in the world, but we might not have been in the right fit for ourselves, or we could have been marginal, but you were in that perfect fit, you know, to really take advantage of how good that you could be. So I think it's the confidence thing, but then I also think it's about being in the right place at the right time.
And
I've always thought LeBron's first, I'm a LeBron guy, okay? I'll just confess that, but I've always thought his first stint in Cleveland, he is never going to get enough credit for that, because he was in a terrible team situation.
Very true, yeah.
Teammates, I mean, he went to the finals with a team where the second best player was Larry freaking Hughes. he's never going to get enough credit for that because he never won the last game of the year. But that's what you're talking about, right? That's exactly what you're talking about.
And speaking of wrong place, wrong time, I was thinking about this too, about how so many teams were in the wrong place at the wrong time during that Bulls run, like the Cavaliers,
like
the Knicks, like the Jazz, who we would think of them differently if it weren't for the Bulls, because they just obliterated everything in their path.
For sure.
And that goes with somebody like Karl Malone, too.
I mean,
his greatness, would he have been as great without John Stockton and without, you know, the sort of pick-and-roll offense that they developed?
Right.
Or would he have been more, I mean, I know he was more talented than Horace Grant, or would he have just been a, you know, good NBA player like a Horace Grant if put in a different system? It's interesting to think about.
One thing about that reminds me of something that really annoyed me, which was, you know, when Jordan made that shot to beat Cleveland in that series, which was really a pivotal moment in both of those teams' histories.
For sure.
And Ron Harper comes on and kind of acts like, well, they should have had me on Jordan.
Yeah.
He makes this shot where he's flying in the air laterally.
That pissed me off, too, because
he has a tremendous hand in his face.
Yeah, he couldn't have guarded it any better. Nobody could have guarded that any better than that. Come on. I mean,
he actually had two people on him, too. I mean, it wasn't even one.
Yeah, Larry Nance was denying him, too. It's like, just to get the ball. That was crazy. Yeah, I hated that, too. I mean, Jordan said it, that they shouldn't have had Elo. I mean, that's just, come on.
Yeah, that's a play right there. He's getting a shot in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And there's some of that going on. The other thing I wish is that they, and obviously this is impossible, but if they would have had footage of when Jordan is going to Rodman's hotel room, Carmen Electra hiding behind the couch. I mean, that was a classic. I have a feeling there's no footage of that.
No.
I think Twitter would be on fire if that happened right now.
Yeah.
Twitter might explode.
Now, here's another sidelight to this whole thing. I think it's revealing to a whole generation and a reminder to maybe our generation of how great a player Scottie Pippen was. And I heard Steve Kerr interviewed, and he was saying how Jordan was often the bad cop in practice and Scotty was often the good cop, you know, coming over and putting his arm around and saying, it's okay. And that extended to the court. He was, you know, kind of their playmaker in the way they ran things. So I wonder if you guys could just discuss your impressions of Scotty that have come away from these first four parts. Go ahead, Rocky.
You want me to go? I was surprised. I was really surprised, you know, watching Scotty when I was younger, to see him come in his rookie year saying he was going to be better than Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm,
like,
yeah.
I didn't think he had that right. kind of
swagger
about himself.
Yeah.
I always thought that Jordan really killed out or brought out that killer instinct that he had.
Right.
Because when I think back of Scotty, I remember him. They showed it a couple times when he dunked on Ewing.
I love that.
Pushed Ewing down.
I love that.
Stepped over him. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I wasn't so sure Scotty would have had
right.
if Jordan wasn't along his side. Because you know what? Jordan was probably doing that stuff to Scotty in practice.
Maybe. Scotty's a pretty good defender, though.
He was the best guy in the league to guard Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, if he'd have been on another team, you know.
Right. Two of the best perimeter defenders on the same team at the same time. I mean, that's those guys. Goodness.
And hey, who made the trade on draft day to get Pippen?
Exactly, Olden Polynice for Scottie Pippen. Yeah. That ain't bad.
That's a good trade.
Yeah.
That's a
real good trade. Go ahead, Casey. Just your impressions of Scotty.
I mean, he just, you know, like Rocky said, he's that Swiss Army knife that everybody wants nowadays. I mean, he mm-hmm. kind of made it famous.
Yeah.
To be the guy that can play point guard at 6'8", 6'9", guards the other team's best player, rebounds, triple-double threat. And he had, like, you know, once again, you talk about personalities. He was a little bit different personality than Jordan, and I think that's what made it work.
Yeah.
You know, because if he was an in-your-face guy, that probably clashes,
yeah,
you know, a little bit. But he was more of a lead by example, like you said, big cop. But he was really good. I mean, the first time I really knew growing up, I was a Magic Johnson guy. Watching him when they won it the first championship, watching him pick Magic Johnson up full court,
yeah,
that's right,
and bother him. That's kind of when I was a young kid, kind of going, yeah, this guy's pretty good. So he was the ultimate winner. Great defender, and obviously him and Jordan had a really good chemistry together, which is what you need from your two best players.
And started as a manager. I'm sorry.
What's interesting about Pippen is, you know, do we think Pippen would have been the Robin to Jordan's Batman if he went to Duke or if he went to Kentucky?
Probably not.
You know, the fact that he came from where he came from.
Yeah, as a manager at Central Arkansas.
Probably set all that up.
Yep.
And you couldn't have written it any perfect.
Now here's a comparison I saw the other day. I saw a side by side comparison between Kawhi Leonard's numbers and Scottie Pippen's numbers. And Kawhi's a better 3-point shooter, but as far as like a facilitator, Scottie's far better. So I you know, defensively, I think it's pretty much a wash. So
yeah,
I think that
I suspect that if Pippen came along today, he would have made himself into a pretty good 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
If it was so as prevalent as it is today. It's funny how watching this, how you see some of these crazy quotes and you're like, wait a minute. I remember when this was in the first installment, when Bobby Knight says, Jordan is the best basketball player I've ever seen. And he said it in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
where he had played an NBA game.
Yeah.
It was during the Olympic trial. The best basketball player I've ever seen. And we, knowing Bobby Knight, you suspect that maybe a little piece of that was he hated the NBA and he was kind of dissing the NBA.
There's probably some of that.
But still, what an incredible thing to say. And at that stage, he was, what, 21 years old?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
that was right before. Go ahead, Gordy.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that was right before the Olympics. There's a couple of things that happened, too, in the episodes where it's like, wait a minute, what just happened there? And I don't know if you guys caught this, but after the Bulls beat the Pistons in 90, they showed them, like, partying on the plane.
Yeah.
And did you see Jordan had a three-peat shirt on?
No, I didn't see that.
So he had a three-peat shirt on. And he got it because the Pistons had already printed them, like they were gonna three-peat.
Good detail.
I saw it and I was like, is this out of order? And then I got in and I did some digging and yeah, he found a three-peat shirt and he was wearing it like in spite of the Pistons. I I thought that was.
That's a very Jordan thing to do.
Man, he hated him. He hated the Pistons. There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's very evident. Yeah. There was sort of a progression in the history of the league at that time. It went from Celtics, Lakers to Pistons to Bulls, and some of the stuff that Isaiah was saying the other day was that you sort of had to hate the team that you had to get over to get to the top. I don't know if that's true, but that's kind of what he was saying. So he was saying we hated the Celtics as much as the Bulls hated us, essentially.
Yeah, it was certainly like that because it was so physical and because there was so much at stake. I think there was a lot of that. It's funny because that game, you know, we've been seeing a lot of these flashback games on all kinds of networks at this stage. That game happened to be on where the Celtics walked out on the Pistons. It's crazy to watch it because it was like Rodman got thrown out because he got tangled up with Brad Lowhouse. And then I didn't remember that Artis Gilmore played with the Celtics at the end of his career, but there he was coming into the game. I didn't remember that. And then at the very end, when the Celtics walk out, Mikhail is talking to Isaiah Thomas and Lambeer comes over and tries to shake hands with Mikhail, and Mikhail just ignores him. I love that.
Lambeer really is a knob, but he might have been a pretty good player in today's game.
Might have been.
He was a stretch four kind of guy, right?
But here's the thing. His whole reputation and his whole demeanor has probably cost him NBA at least assistant jobs, and maybe more than that.
Oh, no question.
Because he's ended up, I think he's coached in the WNBA, I think he's coached in other leagues, and he can't get an NBA job, and I'm sure that's the reason for it, because of how he conducted himself then.
They interviewed him the other day on ESPN, and he was like a pro wrestling villain. Talking about that, he was like, I hate him, I don't care. I don't care what they say, you know.
Yeah,
he's just as irascible as ever.
He's just got to wear it, I guess.
I have something in my head I have to get out before I forget it. That 1984 Olympic team, Charles Barkley and Karl Malone got cut, and Joe Klein and John Kontak made it.
I don't get it. I think probably Bobby Knight didn't want to deal with Barkley. That wouldn't have worked at all.
No. All right, so my understanding of the rest of this, you know, the six installments that are still to come, is that it's going to be more inside stuff that nobody's ever seen before about that last season. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys sort of remember about that last season? And of course, that series with the Jazz, I'm kind of looking forward to just seeing that behind the scenes stuff. What do you guys remember that much?
We've been talking about Pippen a lot, I know, but the biggest thing that I remember is a big adjustment the Bulls made in that series was putting Pippen on Stockton. I don't know if you remember that at all.
I don't.
And Pippen was able to give Stockton a little bit of space. And I think he started going under that ball screen with Malone, but he was long enough to still contest Stockton's jumper. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was – and again, I was a, 20-year-old kid – that's something that I noticed. I'll see if that's actually, you know, what actually happened, but that's what I remember off the top of my head as to a big moment in that series by putting Pippen on Stockton. So I'm anxious to hear that, you know, hearing like Jordan talk in the huddle about situations and how to deal with, I mean, that's like really high level stuff. That's the stuff that, I mean, it's over, maybe not in your head, Casey, but that stuff's over my head. And I'm sitting there trying to think about it. And just try to formulate what he's saying. Like, that's the stuff that I want to see, and I want to talk about. I want them to talk about, you know, adjustments that they're making and how they're guarding people and playing teams.
Come on, Casey, what do you got?
Yeah, I when Jordan was in that run, I mean, first of all, I didn't like him because all my friends were Jordan fans, and I was a Magic Johnson guy, so I was always rooting for them to lose, but I always knew they weren't going to lose. So that's kind of what I remember watching the games going. Jordan just had that that aura about him that you just knew he wasn't going to lose a series, you know, as, mm-hmm. as close as it got or whatever, that it was 2-2, 3-2. Back then, I just, you know, I was a lot younger, obviously, but I just never felt like he was going to lose a series. Once they got it rolling, I never, ever felt like someone was going to beat him. The only time was the year he came back from baseball and they played the Magic.
Right. You could tell he was different. Yeah.
Yeah. You could tell he wasn't Jordan. You could tell he was a little rusty.
Yeah.
But ever since then, it's just, I would watch the series. I would always root for him to lose because I wasn't a Jordan guy, but you kind of knew he wasn't. He was just that guy. He was too good.
I remember one time during that run, there was a quote Pat Riley said, was talking about this, and he said, you know what, I'll be honest with you, I don't think anybody's going to win the championship until he retires.
That's probably correct.
I just don't see you knocking him out in the series. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And that last game that you know Jordan hit the shot on, I don't know if you remember the play that led to that shot. Karl Malone got the ball on the post on the right spot, and Jordan snuck in from the baseline and stole the ball. So that kind of set that whole thing up. So, you know, he just continued to make play after play. And I mean, I know that he missed some, and as time goes on, history doesn't talk about those misses. It actually talked about the one foul shot he missed
against
somebody. Yeah.
That was very quick, by the way. He didn't want to talk about that. That was very fast.
He paid minimal attention to that.
Yeah, history remembers all the greatness and the great things that he did, but it really did feel like he just made play after play to will his team to victories.
One thing that's really cool about the series is let these guys just talk, man. Like, they don't care about the media as much. They don't care about what's on Twitter.
Right.
Those old school guys, man, they just say what they want to say. It's really refreshing.
It is.
To hear them talk. Like, even when Isaiah was on First Take and all that, like, he doesn't sugarcoat it like the guys nowadays do. And obviously you understand why they do because of social media, but Bill Laimbeer, you talked about Bill Laimbeer. Yeah. Like, he didn't care. Like, Jordan, when he talks, he's just like, I hate Isaiah. Like, it's really refreshing to see genuine guys talking about how much they hate somebody or their rivalries rather than sugarcoating it.
Yeah, I agree. Why not? You know? Yeah, especially at this point in their lives. I was very, very impressed with Isaiah on it and then on that First Take thing like you're talking about, Casey. I didn't buy it 100%. But, you know, a lot of pride in what that team accomplished and also just railing back against some of the image of that team, which I was sort of Isaiah's stock is going up in my mind a little bit.
Yeah, I was surprised because I really, you know, I wanted to hate him and I didn't hate him in this series, you know, in this documentary.
I think
we're good. I wanted to mention one last thing about that Utah series. So years later, when Jordan unretired one last time with the Wizards, his last game happened to be against the Sixers in Philadelphia. So before the game, it's a big mob scene in the visiting locker room. So a couple of us were talking to Brian Russell, who, of course, was the victim of that shot and, you know, the push off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I figured, you know, he would have some stock answer to that question. So I asked him about it, and he just, like, he wanted no part of that. I thought there would be some stock response, you know, it's like Elo has to that shot. You know, it's like you do what you can do, but the guy's just that great and that's that. So, but he was not interested in.
Karl Malone thought he got fouled on that play that you were talking about, Rocky. He thought he got fouled. Yeah. Maybe he did. I don't know. But,
possible.
Not when it's Michael Jordan and not when it's an NBA clinching game. That's for sure.
No.
Fair enough.
But yeah, at any rate, a really entertaining series, and I will be curious to see what. Apparently, there's more Steve Kerr than even Steve Kerr wants in this series. You know that the fact.
That's cool.
You know he's a great guy and a great interview, and obviously he's had great success as a coach.
I like him a lot.
I do too. He's a really incredibly bright guy. But he was on some podcast, and he was talking about how he's on, you know, the promotional materials with Pippen, Jordan, and Phil Jackson, and Rodman, and he's like, you know, what am I doing there? I played 15 minutes a game, and you know,
he's a pretty recognizable face now, though.
Well, of course, that's what he's saying. That's what he's because he's basically on there because of what he's done with the Warriors, not because he was necessarily an integral part of those Bulls teams.
There was was a practice where Jordan punched Kerr in the
Correct.
Face. So I would love if we got to see that go down.
Yeah. I don't know if it was that year. I think it might have been a year or two earlier, unfortunately. But yeah. But I think that gets back to what we were talking about before. You know, it's like Jordan was unsparing of his teammates, and we've seen a little bit of that so far, just about how he's working guys over in practice and saying, why aren't you here? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? So it's certainly an interesting dynamic and an interesting commentary about, you know, he would run guys off like earlier in his career, like, you know, guys who he didn't feel were up to snuff, like Brad Sellers, guys like that, they were gone because they couldn't deal with Jordan, you know, and that's just the way it is. Yeah, it's a very Darwinian thing.
One more thing. That just reminds me of one more thing. Are you surprised that he didn't try to run Jerry Krause off?
You know what?
Especially when it's coming back after playing baseball.
I think everybody liked to have him there as the villain, I think, including Reinsdorf. It's like Reinsdorf comes off as the good guy. I think he's a convenient villain for everybody. And the other thing is, he was pretty good at his job. I mean, he's, you know, obviously he has some flaws. He's rough around the edge. But, you know, as far as building the team, you know, who could argue with what they accomplished?
But was he good because he had Michael Jordan? That's the question.
That's not a bad start. Not a bad starting point. But, you know,
he made good moves. He put pieces around him.
Yeah, he definitely did. And then they reshuffled the deck, you know, from the first three-peat to the second three-peat, too. There were some different pieces there, you know. Like
it took some balls to trade Oakley.
Yeah, because Jordan didn't want him gone. Jordan wanted him on the team. But here's an interesting commentary about team building. That very early in the first episode, when they talk about Jordan's second year, when the team wanted a tank and they wanted him to sit out with the foot injury, and he's saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I thought that was a really interesting commentary just about, you know, we always talk about culture, right? Him establishing okay, so we're just going to squeak in and we're going to lose to the Celtics, but let's get in. Let's not worry about tanking. Yeah. And I think he really established the culture right there.
Yeah,
for sure. 100%.
Most other athletes in that situation would have been wary of, is this team and this team doctor trying to make me play?
Yeah.
That's the common thing you hear in that situation, right?
Well, and I think that gets back to the difference in eras too, how the money's really exploded and how, you know, everybody's out to protect their investment on both sides of the equation.
Jerry Krause is a little bit of ahead of his time there too, trying to manage Jordan's legs and his foot and everything like that, and then maybe seeing the lottery pick. And I guarantee you, he was trying to tag because he wanted Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
So when they ended up, you know, getting that 10th, I think the 10th pick they got, was that the year or was that?
That was a different year. That year, if they would have tanked, that was an unweighted lottery. There was no ping pong balls. Everybody who got in the lottery had an equal chance of getting the number one pick, and it was Brad Daugherty was the number one pick, and Len Bias was the number two pick.
Oops.
Gotcha. You know?
And so we're gonna get fed to the 86 Celtics, who I think might have been the best NBA team ever, or you know, in the long term interest of the team, who knows if it would have been better to get in that lottery, you know. But anyway, that's interesting. It's not just that they would have been a lottery pick, they would have maybe had a shot at a game-changing type player.
For sure.
Okay, any other final thoughts that we want to share here? Anybody?
No, it's a blast, though. I'd love to do it again if you have anything else you want to talk about. Thanks for having me on.
Great.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks to both of you. So,
we'll take you up on that. I like this kind of stuff. I'm glad you guys didn't think you were being interviewed. I'm glad you thought we were just sitting around talking. That's what we wanted. Yeah. Appreciate it.
So anyway, that's it for After the Buzzer, our multimedia extravaganza here. And we thank Rocky Parise, Casey Stitzel, and I'm Gordy Jones, and Mike Gross is socially distant, and we'll talk to you again soon.